Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's March the 17th, 2011. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons, on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune, and hurrah, my voice for freedom is the rising.
Okay, I'm going to kick off this week with some comments about the bionic backpack incident in Spokane and the subsequent arrest by the FBI of a man named Kevin William Harpum. I checked around after I heard the name, and nobody on our list seems to have ever heard of him, which isn't surprising. He seems to have been almost entirely internet, like 90% of the so-called movement today. As I predicted, the Phoebes found some poor schlub living all alone out in the woods to carry the weight for this alleged bomb plot, although I'm still not sure how exactly one can conspire with oneself. Anyway, this poor guy Harpum is the one who seems to have drawn the short straw and will carry the weight for this incident, whether it ever actually happened or not. And by the way, one interesting development which has gotten virtually no media publicity at all. Remember those three so-called Alert City workers who found the bionic backpack that day? Supposedly because it quote-unquote had wires sticking out of it? Well, it turns out they weren't actual city workers at all. They were three temps from Labor Ready who were being subcontracted by the city in order to pick up the garbage along the parade route so the niggers and the liberals wouldn't have to look at a messy street while they adored Martin Lucifer Coon. And after these three temps found the bomb, the next day they lost their jobs. They were fired by Labor Ready, presumably at the behest of the client, the city of Spokane. Now, this kind of makes one wonder. After this supposed heroic act, why would anybody in the Spokane local government, or maybe the FBI, be so pissed off at these three guys that in a moment of anger and pique, they made a call and had the temp agency fire them? Having worked for such agencies before, I can tell you that unless these guys were obviously drunk on duty or something like that, they wouldn't have been fired without a complaint from the client. Did these three heroes find something that they weren't supposed to find, stick their noses in where they had no business, and maybe mess up what was intended to be an Oklahoma City-style incident set up by the powers that be in order to create a bogus terror threat and justify increased surveillance and suspension of the Constitution? Kevin Harpum has been charged with attempting to use a weapon of mass destruction, i.e. the bionic backpack found near the route of a January 17th Martin Luther King Day parade. So far, the main evidence against him seems to be the fact that he made over 1,000 posts to VNN, using his own name and also the alias of Joe Snuffy. Harpum was active in the forums until a day before the alleged bomb was found. The media is also attempting to link Harpum to a Canadian named Craig Cobb, who's on the run from the Great White North on charges of internet hate speech. But so far, they haven't produced any evidence of any kind for this allegation, and Cobb himself denies it. Now, there was apparently at least one cognitive dissonance operative on VNN who was planting rumors to that effect and generally stirring shit over the past week. Eventually, it got so blatant that even Alex Linder finally noticed that he had a ringer on his site. He put the asshole on moderation, and the last time I checked, this particular personality had simply disappeared, as cognitive dissonance ops do when they're rumbled. Craig Cobb himself has continued to post to VNN, which is perfectly legal in the United States, although I'm sure the Canadians will charge him anyway for anything he says. And he's of the opinion that this particular cognitive dissonance op was connected in some way with some Jewish female reporter in Vancouver who has apparently made a career out of trying to turn Craig Cobb into some kind of racist John Dillinger of Canada. The kikes really hate it when their victims escape their net. There was a long article in the Spokane Spokesman Review claiming that Harpham, quote-unquote, fantasized about race war, and going on and on about his VNN posts, all of which, by the way, are perfectly legal and constitutionally protected free speech, but which will no doubt feature prominently at his trial. Would anyone care to hazard a bet that at Harpham's trial, the so-called evidence will be about 10% forensics from the FBI lab claiming that they found skin cells or hair fibers or something with his DNA on the backpack, which of course the average jury will have no way of assessing or disproving, and the rest of the so-called evidence will be about 90% quotes from his perfectly legal and constitutionally protected internet posts? Reminds me of that old joke from the Cold War. An American and a Russian were arguing over which of their systems of government was better. The American says, in the United States, we have freedom of speech. The Russian says, but of course, in Soviet Union, we have freedom of speech as well. The American replies, yes, but in America, we also have freedom after the speech. And the Russian says, ah. Unfortunately, in Barack Obama's America, that's no longer the case. We no longer have freedom after the speech, as Kevin Harpham has found out the hard way. And where did the information about Harpham's politically incorrect internet posting come from? From our old friends at the Southern Poverty Law Center, of course. It seems to be a case of everybody in the establishment elbowing one another in order to get the most media coverage. It appears that over 50 federal agents, some of them from as far away as Washington, D.C., took part in the raid on Harpham's home in rural Stevens County, Washington, in order to arrest one man who most likely never did anything except sit in his room behind a computer, like so many of you listening to this podcast do. Food for thought, huh? Another question that springs to mind. Harpham faces life in prison if convicted of the charges of attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction and possession of an unregistered explosive device. On the other hand, Edgar Steele's handyman, Larry Fairfax, faces only 2 years on a plea bargain deal for the very same charges. What's up with that, homie? Mark Potok says the Southern Poverty Law Center's records show Harpham was a member in 2004 of the National Alliance, but in view of Potok's dysfunctional relationship with the truth, I think we need to take anything he says with a large bowl of salt. Harpham may have been an NA member and he may not. We'll have to wait and see if the FBI can come up with Harpham's completed and signed membership application, and if they can, you'll get why the Northwest Front doesn't use them. Eric Glebe has denied that Harpham is a member. But how the hell would he know? Getting back to Harpham's VNN posts, it would seem that the curse of Glenn Miller has struck again. Harpham appears to have been a typical net Nazi who hung out on VNN, and among other things, he financially supported the drunken informer and ex-denizen of the Witness Protection Program, Fraser Glenn Miller, apparently contributing money to Miller's bibulous Senate campaign. Admittedly, this is according to the SPLC, who claim to have built up a whole file of over 1,000 posts on Harpham off VNN since 2004, and who probably assisted the FBI in grooming him for the frame. I imagine some SAIC in Spokane called up Mark Potok and asked for a quote-unquote profile, which, reading between the lines, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, would mean, find somebody in Eastern Washington we can fit up for this. So far as anyone has revealed, other than a brief paper membership in Eric Glebe's National Alliance around 04, assuming the SPLC has gotten even that much right, Harpham has never done anything more than post VNN and vent. You know, you guys out there might really want to reconsider your participation in VNN and Stormfront and White Nationalist Info and such like. The enemy does monitor these things, and anything you say online can and will be used against you, sometimes years later. I know, we used to run a forum like that at northwestrepublic.com. That forum recently went offline due to the usual dysfunctional movement character issues, i.e. the kid that was running it as webmaster disappeared, which is yet another argument for establishing a proper general headquarters for the Northwest Front. I really hope you guys will get around to that real soon, but it's up to you. When you decide you want a general headquarters, I presume you'll let me know through changing your behavior. However, now I'm not certain whether it would really be a good idea to get NorthwestRepublic.com back online, even if we can. If we're just handing information to the enemy and possibly helping them build files on us that will be used to fabricate charges for non-existent federal crimes. While not accomplishing anything serious by way of getting you guys to quit screwing around, pack the moving van, and get your asses up here. I mean, if the forum isn't going to accomplish its stated purpose of facilitating actual physical Northwest migration, then why do we need to be handing Morris D's and the ADL all this information? Today, they're subcontracting NGOs working for the federal government in order to deny American citizens their constitutional and civil rights. Why should we help them if we won't help ourselves in the process? In a country where the SPLC and the ADL are aligned not just with the regular FBI and BATFE secret police, but also with a monstrosity like the Department of Homeland Security, which is purely a vehicle for government political control of the population, and which is now demanding the right to look at airline passengers' naked bodies, anyone who still believes that they can say what they want with a clear conscience is naive. We need to understand that for some time now, posting dissonant political opinions on the internet has been playing with fire. And once a post has left your mouse, it's like a bullet from a gun. You can't take it back and it's out there forever. Ask Johnny Logan Spencer, who was arrested and got 5 years in federal prison for posting a poem criticizing Obama on NewSaxon.org. And he was arrested and charged and tried 2 years after he did so, because basically some nigger FBI agent saw it and got pissed off and quite literally decided to make a federal case out of it. Until such time as the white man recovers his ancient courage and decides to really resist, like it or not, thought is the battlefield. And more, the regime is dragging people out of their homes in the dawn for the crime of publicly expressing forbidden thought. People like me complain all the time that no one's listening to us. Boy, do I ever complain about it. But who knows? Maybe the regime knows something we don't. They wouldn't be afraid of the internet as much as they are if they weren't afraid that someday we might find the magic beans and the magic words to transmute thought into action. Now, some years ago, Billy Roper, who does have his moments, told a friend of mine something which I think has a lot of sense to it. Roper said, "If you're ever going to consider any form of direct action against the system, you should never, ever visit an online white nationalist forum." Any IT tech can tell you that he's right about that. Even visiting a white nationalist website will leave an IP fingerprint in the log file that you were there and what pages you visited. Now look, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to spread paranoia to the point where people are afraid even to visit a white racial website, especially northwestfront.org. But you need to understand that even if what we do on the internet may seem like a hobby or just entertainment to you, the FBI and the other secret police agencies disagree. Remember, these agencies are paid untold billions of dollars every year by the regime to basically process human beings and human lives through the most cold and cruel mincing machine ever devised by man, with the exception of Stalin's gulags, and spit out people at the other end into a cage full of beasts wearing orange jumpsuits, not to mention the government subcontractors like SPLC and ADL. You are the raw material, the fuel, that the machinery of repression in America and Canada needs to function. Remember, without Nazis and fascists and racists, there can't be anti-Nazis and anti-fascists and anti-racists with their mailing lists and their federal budgets. They need us. They need to cull a few white boys from the herd every now and then and run us through the mincing machine in order to justify their existence and their immense budgets to their political masters in D.C. and New York. Anytime you post, you run the risk of drawing the short straw. Now, that having been said, I ask that all of you do just that. That you at least post enough to spread the word about the Northwest migration and the Northwest Front and bring people to our website. I ask that you do this in full knowledge of the risk, however comparatively small that is, because we have to begin recovering in ourselves the one manly virtue that used to be associated with our race more than any other, simple physical courage. George Orwell once wrote, "In a time of universal deception, speaking the truth is a revolutionary act." He was right. One of the hallmarks of a revolutionary act is that it does require courage. If not the courage to plant a bomb or pull a trigger or charge a government building with a rifle in your hand, then at least the moral courage necessary to speak the truth in a time of universal deception, in full awareness of the danger of so doing. Courage has to start somewhere, and I'm asking all of you to start there. You don't have to stand up and bellow at the enemy and talk openly about armed resistance and deliberately draw attention to yourselves. Let me do that. After all, it's in my job description. It's what you pay me the big bucks for. But at least part of these incidents, like the Kevin Harpham case, is an intention on the part of the regime to terrify the rest of us into silence by making an example out of someone like Kevin. It's institutional terrorism. Don't let them threaten and intimidate you into silence. Just be careful and always remember they're listening. Today is St. Patrick's Day, so our music selection for this podcast will be all Irish. I've always been thankful for two things in my life. One is that in the 1970s, I got to see Rhodesia before it died, which was kind of the last outpost of the old British Empire, and I got a taste of what life was like back in the good old days when Britannia did indeed rule the waves. I'm also thankful that back in the 1980s, I got a chance to see the last of the old Ireland before it died. Catholic and socially conservative, traditional and all white. I last went back looking for my children in 1998, and already the old Ireland was gone. The old Moore Street Market had become a colony of Nigeria, and believe it or not, the latest pop hero in Dublin at that time was Kenny the Kid from South Park. Like the song says, I remember Dublin City in the rare old times, and I wouldn't trade those memories for anything in the world. I think I already played this cut on here once about a year ago, but to hell with it. For those of you who've read the other books of mine besides the Northwest Novel series, I referred to the song in one chapter of my novel, The Stars and Their Path. This is the Irish Tenors.
My young love said to me, my mother won't mind, and my father won't slight you for your lack of kind. She stepped away from me, and this she did say, it will not be long, love, till our wedding stepped away from me, and she moved through the fair, and fondly I watched her move here and move there. She went her way homewards with one star awake, as the swan in the last night she came to me, my young love came in. So softly she entered that her feet made no din. She came close beside me, and this she did say, it will not be long, love, till our wedding day.
At the time of the bionic backpack incident a couple of months ago, some of you emailed me or spoke to me and warned me to be careful because it looked like Rachel Maddow and some other Jew liberals in the media might be trying to set the Northwest Front up to take the blame, or somehow trying to connect me personally with the incident. As it turned out, the Rachel Maddow thing only lasted for a couple of days before somebody got in touch with her and told her the Northwest Front was blacked out and she shouldn't be giving us any publicity at all. So far, the media statements I've sent out about the bionic backpack have all been ignored, and the media is simply regurgitating FBI press releases and Mark Potok's bullshit on cue. I appreciate the concern for my safety, guys, but I'm not worried about it. I can't be, or I couldn't function. I just automatically assume that I'm on somebody's list, and I assume that the security organs are stalking me and looking for an excuse to lock me up. If I wasn't able to accept that and live with it, I wouldn't be doing this. Part and parcel of my job is always waiting for the knock on the door. Folks, it's like this. Yes, I know the organs, as Solzhenitsyn called them, are hunting me. I mean, they'd hardly be doing their job if they weren't now, would they? You've heard the standard expression about how they're supposed to defend the United States against all enemies foreign and domestic. Well, I'm one of the domestic enemies they're talking about, and I've never bothered to conceal the fact. There has never been any mystery about me, about who I am, about what I believe, about what I think. I am a totally committed enemy of this evil government and this deranged society that has not just made my own life so personally hellish, but which has destroyed whole generations of white people. We live in a totalitarian state that has mutated into a monster that's trying to exterminate all of the hundreds of millions of people on Earth who share my genes and my racial and cultural heritage. At least when the organs are spying on me, they've got the right guy, and they're not just conspiring to frame poor old Apu down at the Quickie Mart for plotting to blow up Six Flags. The only real protection I have against something like what's happening to Kevin Harpham right now is that I don't actually do anything except what the Constitution supposedly guarantees me the right to do. But, hey, that's never stopped them before. Ask Matt Hale. Ask Bill White. And Johnny Logan Spencer and Edgar Steele and the Huttery Militia. And now you can ask Kevin Harpham how that worked out for them. One of these days, probably in Obongo's second term when he lets all that nigger hatred of white people hang out, the Democrats will find some way to dispense with the Constitution altogether. Bush and the neocons already left them the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act of 2006, and those come mighty damn close. And once the organs find out how to finally deep-six the Constitution, they can just come and take me away like I'm sure they long to do. Or else they can simply wait till the year 2014 when we're all required by law to purchase Obamacare, and I can't come up with $15,000 a year or so, and then I really will be a criminal, and they can arrest me and jail me at will for the crime of being poor. But until that day comes, I intend to exercise the tattered remains of my constitutional rights to the full. I will under no circumstances allow the federal government of the United States to dictate to me what I can think and what I can say out loud or what I can write. And I'm damn sure not going to allow Morris Dees and Mark Potok to dictate those things to me. That is institutional terrorism of the kind that they're now practicing against Edgar Steele and others, and I will not knuckle under to it. Yes, I know, they're out there in their silk suits and their Gucci shoes and their black SUVs and their dark sedans with the illegally tinted windows, and I've seen some signs of their presence recently, which I won't get into here. Now, some of our people have seen them recently, and they're always cruising around the Northwest, and when they're not bringing in armies of 50 agents to arrest one man sitting behind a computer like they did last week in Stevens County, they're trying to develop informants, looking for anybody who will talk to them. That's the first step for the FBI and Secret Service and BATFE and the DHS and the whole range of alphabet soup secret police agencies, to find somebody, anyone, who will talk to them about anything. The weather, sports, politics, anything, doesn't matter. They're looking for someone who will talk and not simply close the door in their faces when they don't have a warrant, which is what anyone with a shred of common sense would do. Why would you not? These people have come to your home in order to do harm to you and to your family and to others. Why in God's name would any of us assist them by speaking with them at all? But most of us do. We're so in love with the sound of our own voices, and we think we're so smart that we can play with them and use them, when in fact it's always the reverse. The FBI and other secret police love it when they come across white people who think they're clever and who think they can match wits with them, which you are not, repeat, not clever enough to do. No one is. So don't try it. These people do this for a living, you know. They are carefully trained by some of the top psychologists, profilers, and intelligence analysts in the world in this whole process of developing informants and extracting every last fragment of knowledge and data from what someone says, whenever someone is foolish enough to talk to them. I say again, and pound this into your brains, people. That is the first step to developing information and also to developing an informant. To find someone who will talk to them about anything. Remember, you still have the right to remain silent, so exercise it, at least until they start waterboarding you. And also remember, they may have the power now, but in the long run, they're going to lose. If they confront you, don't be stupid. Don't pick the losing side just to save yourself some temporary bother. Yeah, I know right now it wouldn't seem to any rational observer like they're going to lose. It looks like they've got all the cards. I get that. They're far more numerous than we are. A few weeks ago, I estimated our internet audience in the white nationalist movement at approximately 100,000 people. But of those, at least 90% of them are completely useless, except as potential financial supporters. And nobody has found a way yet to activate most of them even for that purpose. If the NF or anybody else could get $10 a month on a regular basis off just the people who listen to this program, never mind all 100,000 internet nationalists, then the movement's money problems would be solved, but it ain't going to happen. To the vast majority of the people who get on the internet for whatever white nationalist reason, it's just entertainment. And there's probably at least 100,000 employees of the FBI alone. The American secret police have got the largest arsenal in the world on their side, from your 9mm sidearms on up to nuclear weapons and sarin nerve gas if they need backup. They've got the world's largest source of money, the Federal Reserve and the U.S. taxpayer base. If all else fails, or if they just want to save themselves some bother, they could just buy us all off for $1 million apiece, and almost all of us would take it. A few might refuse. I like to think I would, but hey, if you FBI guys ever decide to go that route, give me a shout. It would be at least nice to be asked. The regime has all the mainstream media, of course, except for the internet. Although it looks like we're going to lose that with all this talk about an internet kill switch for Obama. The regime has got the courts and the prisons and the whole economy and all the established churches and Arianna Huffington and John Stewart to back them up. So they're probably sitting in their cubicles laughing at me right now saying, how can we lose? But they will. Oh yeah, the United States is going to lose, eventually. If only because of bad karma and because in human events, just like on the schoolyard, nobody likes a bully. And the consequences of being a bully are that one day people have finally had enough. Eventually, America is going to lose, and these federal bastards are going to find themselves with their expensive suits ripped off their backs and their guns taken away and lying on the ground in a world of hurt. Okay, it may not be us that does it. The NF hasn't exactly gotten its act together yet, and I admit that. I have to admit that when, after a year on the air, this show only has about 4,000 listeners a week, the vast majority of whom never even bother to get in touch, then, well, that doesn't look too good for our team. And still, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that eventually all these assholes in their silk suits, sitting in their cubicles listening, waiting for me to make a slip and say something they can arrest and prosecute me for, they're going to lose. And their whole world is going to come crashing down into rubble like ancient Carthage. That's another Semitic empire that didn't make it. Not even like ancient Rome, because when Rome finally went down, they left behind far more that endured than these wretched little Americans ever will. All America will ever leave behind is a lot of styrofoam McDonald's hamburger boxes. The Americans are going to lose for several very good, very solid reasons. The first reason America is going to lose is because they're incompetent. They're idiots. America couldn't organize a piss-up in a brewery. Just last week in Afghanistan, the American military wasted God knows how many millions of dollars firing a drone destroyer missile that blew up 9 small children gathering firewood on a mountainside. All of this fantastic technology that America has is absolutely useless in the hands of stupid niggers and morally denatured Beavis and Butthead mall rats who fumble it like the Three Stooges. Speaking of Afghanistan, after 10 years of hunting, billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands dead, the mighty United States of America can't find a single man hiding in a cave. After 10 years, the mighty U.S. Army and the swaggering Hoorah Marine Corps can't defeat a handful of ragged little barefoot brown men with nothing but Kalashnikovs and a few magazines of ammo apiece. They will expend a $20 million Predator drone missile in order to blow up an elementary school in Iraq or a wedding in Afghanistan. They can't even run an efficient postal service. They can't pass a major piece of legislation like health care without resorting to open public bribery and corruption. After 5 years, they still can't rebuild a major historic American city destroyed by a hurricane. Right now, a nation across the Pacific is undergoing a catastrophic nuclear crisis, which may send fallout to the American West Coast. And that bird-brained nigger in the White House is holding press conferences about his NBA basketball picks. That same nappy-headed so-called leader of the free world right now is so blindingly stupid that he literally can't address a classroom full of schoolchildren without a teleprompter to tell him what to say. Barry has accomplished something that 2 years ago I would have considered to be impossible. He's actually managed to make George W. Bush look able and intelligent by comparison. Yes, I know Barry doesn't really run the show down there at 1600 Pennsylvania. Cass Sunstein and all those Jews do. But still, what does it say about America that they can't even keep up appearances anymore? Every election, both parties field candidates for all these high-profile jobs no longer contains much of anybody who's not mentally subnormal, or a clown, or a criminal, or some kind of pervert like that twinkle-toes senator from Idaho who cruises airport men's rooms, or the recently elected Jew mayor of Chicago who used to run around lobbying senators and congressmen butt-naked in the Capitol gym. America can no longer produce any presidential candidates who are even mediocrities. They're all genuinely stupid men, in Jug Ears and Barry's case, breathtakingly so. You really have to wonder sometimes just why exactly it is that they put that silly coon in the White House. Can their world, their wonderful and oh-so-superior democracy, honest to God, not come up with anything better than a nigger from Kenya who can't even produce an American birth certificate? Was it sheer Jewish arrogance? Their way of rubbing the rest of our noses in the fact that they're openly in charge now? And if so, was that really a very intelligent or far-seeing move on their part? Is that degree of arrogance and contempt for the people they rule really a good idea for them? I suppose you could say that America is going to lose because they're not fooling anybody anymore. Their world, their system is sick, weak, confused, and barely functional. It's quavering with senility, and all the rest of the world knows it. America is still feared in certain quarters, true, although less and less, but no one respects them anymore, and no one trusts them. Why should they? Muammar Gaddafi in Libya got some sense knocked into him back in the 1980s by Ronald Reagan, and ever since then, he's been a loyal Arab flunky of America and Israel, and he's kept the oil flowing, which is what he was there for. Now he's hit a rough patch, and the Americans and the Jews have thrown him under the bus. If for no other reason, America's going to lose because no one can trust anything the regime says anymore, and they won't be able to bamboozle anybody into carrying their water and doing their dirty work anymore. At least the Russians and the Chinese pay well. Now that leads into the second reason that America's going to lose. The regime has lost the consent of the governed. Do you know that only 35% of the present U.S. population pays any income tax at all? And that's the 35% they've lost, the third that counts. The people of this country, the real people, the white people who do the work and pay the taxes and keep the machinery and the technology running, don't want them anymore. I'm sure that I'm not the only one the secret police are listening to as they sit in their cubicles or sit in a Starbucks in Georgetown listening to their laptop with a headset or however the hell it works. All these other people that they're monitoring, the Tea Party and the militia, the birthers, the sovereign citizen people, tax rebels, survivalists, the skinheads, whatever's left of the Klan, the bloggers, the Council of Conservative Citizens, what are they all about, basically? What have they got in common? They're all looking for a way to get the United States of America off their backs. The people of the North American continent, the real people, the white people, want the American government and the American laws and American arrogance gone, out of their lives. Now, they're not sure how yet, and maybe the Northwest Front won't be the ones they turn to if we don't get our act together. That's on us. But listen very hard to me, all you morally denatured droids with guns and badges and the expensive suits who hear my voice. As sick and destitute, as isolated and alone as I am, I speak for the real people of America. You no longer do, and you never did. I speak for history. You speak for nobody except that pathetic primate in the White House and his little Jewish handlers. And I'm telling you, we don't want you anymore. We want you gone. And when millions of white people want something bad enough, history usually finds a way to give it to us. Now, the third reason that America is going to lose is simple. We are right and they are wrong. Okay, granted, with that and a dollar, I can buy a cup of thin, watered coffee at McDonald's. But it sure as hell doesn't hurt. The FBI and DHS and Janet Napolitano are making a fundamental mistake that tyrants always make. They think they can destroy an idea by destroying the people who believe in it, as they're trying to destroy Edgar Steele and Kevin Harpham. The United States thinks that if they can only imprison or eventually kill enough of us, the ideas of freedom and racial pride in our white heritage will disappear. But human beings and human events don't work like that. You can't infiltrate an idea. You can't put it in prison with informers and wiretaps and perjured testimony and fabricated evidence. You can't shoot an idea. That's been tried so often in the past 200 years, I'm sure even historical illiterates like the FBI can probably recall some examples of that failure if they put their minds to it. I'm not saying that our idea is stronger than theirs. I'm saying that we have one, and they don't. Starbucks and Burger King and plasma TVs and Disney World aren't an idea, they're toys. And man does not live by toys alone. As stumbling and confused and hesitant as we are, at least so far, we do what we do for reasons of the heart and the mind and the soul. The Americans do what they do for money. Sure, money and media and prison can beat us for a time. It has so far, and it'll beat us for a while yet. But not forever. Some of you may wonder why I play this music I play on here. It's not just to provide my listeners with some relief from my babbling voice. It's to show my own people what we have that makes us better than them, as we are better than them. The music is us, not them. And because we're capable of creating it and understanding and feeling it in ourselves, we are going to win and the United States is going to lose. Speaking of which, at the risk of offending some of our British listeners who hopefully by now know me and my work well enough to get where I'm coming from with this, I'm going to play an IRA song now called The Boys of the Old Brigade. I referred to this song with updated Northwest lyrics in my novel, The Hill of the Ravens. And if some of you want to dig out your copies and do a sing-song someday, at least now you'll know the tune. This is The Wolf Tones.
Proud and glad of the land where they were born. Some they say, and memories few of far off distant days, when being just a lad like you, I joined the IRA. Where are the lads who stood with me when history was made? Of Graham McRae, I long to see the boys of the old brigade. From hills and farms, the call to arms was heard by one and all. And from the glen came brave young men to answer Ireland's call. Was long ago we faced the foe, the old brigade and me. But by my side they fought and died that Ireland might be free. Where are the lads who stood with me when history was made? Oh, Graham McRae, I long to see the boys of the old brigade. And now, my boy, I've told you why on Easter morn I sigh. For I recall my comrades all of dark old days gone by. I think of men who fought in Glen with rifle and grenade. May heaven keep the men who sleep from the ranks of the old brigade. Where are the lads who stood with me when history was made? Oh, Graham McRae, I long to see the boys of the old brigade.
I got an email today from somebody called Matt, doesn't say where he's from, saying nothing but, how can I join? Well, I've gone over this before, but we need regular recaps on certain topics, so I'll go over this one again. You don't join, Matt, because there's nothing to join. The Northwest Imperative is an idea, and the FBI can't infiltrate an idea or frame an idea with perjured testimony. The Northwest Front is not an organization, it's an organism. There are no application forms, no ranks, no hierarchy, and no membership list anywhere. The Northwest Front probably has more genuine, physical, off-internet, real-world existence than any other movement on the right except for the Tea Party. But even so, it's not something you join. Northwest Front is simply the name of a group of individuals who believe in the coming of an independent white homeland in the Pacific Northwest, some of whom are actually working to some degree in the real world for the establishment of that homeland, and the rest of whom do so on the internet, sort of. That doesn't sound like much, but great oaks from little acorns grow, as the saying goes. We've got Facebook and Twitter, and so did the people who overthrew the governments in Egypt and Tunisia, and who are trying to revolt against Gaddafi right now. So who knows what we could develop into. Nor are we the only group working towards a white homeland in the Pacific Northwest. There are other groups and movements, such as the Northwest Epiphany Group, small Christian identity groups, mostly in Idaho and other outfits that practice Northwest migration in that they bring people into the homeland, but they have no formal program or sometimes not even a name. We use the name Northwest Front because our wing of the movement is more or less centered around the four Northwest Independence novels that I wrote, and our people promote the novels and their strategy and their vision for the future as part of the Northwest Imperative. But like I said, there are other outfits up here doing the same thing. Northwest migration isn't something you join. It's something you do. Your membership card is your zip code. Now, the first thing that has to be done before anything else is that we have to accumulate a large number of what I call Class A's here in the Northwest. Now, by that, I refer to mature, intelligent, dedicated, motivated, and courageous white people who are willing to go beyond talk and who will act, the first act being the completely legal deed of packing a moving van and coming here to the homeland where they're supposed to be. Now, the usual movement dysfunctionals must be ruthlessly weeded out in a genuine, serious manner like no other movement group has ever attempted to do, and we seem to be doing a pretty fair job of that. Now, that's our first step. It's a tall order, and it's one of the reasons that I rant and rave at you every week on these podcasts. I'm deliberately trying to cherry-pick our audience, skim the cream off the top, so to speak. I'm trying to get through to the Class A's among you and get your asses up here in the Northwest where you should be. Now, that's the first part of the plan. Now, we do not, and most likely never will, do rallies and street activities and certainly no costumes. We're not going to have Aryan Nation-style gatherings that can be infiltrated by any reporter wearing a wig to cite one particularly disgraceful past incident. Once they're here in the Northwest homeland and settled in, these Class A people have to be organized into small teams or cells of between 3 and 6 people maximum. These teams have to be distributed all over the Northwest, but as much as possible in areas of higher population density and economic viability, because all these new people we bring in are going to need jobs. And in real life, unless you're really skilled, it's going to be hard for an outsider to find work in Devil's Outhouse, Montana. You need to try Seattle or Portland or at least Spokane or Eugene or Boise. Now, the purpose of this kind of cellular organization is so that when the FBI does their little tricks like they've done with Edgar Steele and with Kevin Harpham and other people, the most, hopefully, they'll ever be able to take down at once is 3, maybe 4 people. And they're going to have to do an awful lot of individual infiltration, and that can stretch their manpower. I'm not saying that they're not going to try infiltration and framing us like they're doing with other people, but there's no point in us making it easy for them. Ideally, the median age of these people we bring in should be as young as possible. I know a lot of our most dedicated supporters and activists are middle-aged or older, including myself, but revolution is a young man's game, and we can't defeat the tyranny that rules us with an army of geriatrics. As to how many of these Class A people we need, I keep talking about 1,000 people, but that number is in fact a little bit flexible. We may have to make do with a little fewer than that, but it better not be by much. 1,000 is actually a minimum number. Ideally, before we proceed to the next step, we need more than that. So that's the first step to quote-unquote joining, Matt. Like I said, your membership card is your zip code. There are some things that need to be done in order to get the ball rolling, some of which I believe I already mentioned to you in an email, and you can contact me personally about that. But the main thing is not to get bored or lose patience and go off half-cocked. We have to do this right, from the beginning and from the ground up, because our race is now out of time. We've dicked around for the past 50 years, and this is it. Last chance to get it right. No more endless do-overs, no more practice swings. We have to motivate solid, dedicated, and proactive white people to dedicate themselves to the Northwest Republic, and to manifest that dedication by coming home here to the Pacific Northwest. The overall strategy is explained in our party manual, which we call the White Book, and which sometime this year I'm going to have to update, actually. I don't allow the White Book to be placed on the internet for a variety of reasons, and so far all the recipients have respected my wishes and not posted it. So, what's holding us up? The same thing that's held us up for the past 50 years. The issue of our own character. Now, somehow or other, we have to recover something that has been long lost to our people. The courage and the idealism and the strength that once made our people masters of the earth. We have to become the kind of men and women that our great-grandparents would have recognized and respected. Now, sometimes people ask me how they can change like that, how they can become the kind of men and women who will one day beat these bastards who are listening in and watching us down into the dust and rip their hearts out. Are there two things holding white people back? Fear and ego. You have to banish both from your mind, from your heart, and your soul, because if you try to carry them into battle, either literally or figuratively speaking, you won't make it, and you'll bring others down with you. You have to listen to the voice that speaks inside the mind, the voice that tells you what you must do, the voice in your blood that you've been conditioned all your life by American societies to suppress and to ignore. And the fact is that there is no one single guaranteed way for you to cleanse yourself of fear and of ego and the narcissism of America. It's different with every individual, but it does require a strong and disciplined act of will. And when you're trying to quit smoking or drinking or some other bad bodily habit, it's a case of mind over matter. Trying to give up on political correctness and liberalism and disconnect yourself from the television is a case of mind over mind. And that's a lot harder. Now, some people simply can't do it. I get that. But we don't need for everybody to do it. We only need about 1,000 men and women out of the millions of white people still on this continent to accomplish this mental and spiritual transfiguration. Once we get that core group here in the homeland and get them organized into small teams as the first true Northwest Volunteers, it'll be comparatively easy to pick up the next few thousand we'll need, and with that small force of absolutely dedicated people, we can beat whatever Zion throws at us. Remember, history is never made by majorities. It is made by active and dedicated minorities who are willing to stake everything in order to change the world. How will you know when you do accomplish this transformation? You'll know. White people live in fear all the time, and fear is a form of pain. Now, if you're in pain all the time, you may reach a point where you don't even know it anymore. But once the pain is gone, then you damn sure realize it. Ego and narcissism are harder to control because, unlike fear, they're natural components of the human mind and personality, and very few people can ever suppress them completely. But you don't have to suppress them completely, just enough for you to be able to act as part of a team to get this most important of all the jobs in history done. Fear and doubt, ego and pride, these are what stand in our way. They are strong, but they're not invincible. Just like a lion tamer can subdue and control the big cats, you can subdue and control the part of you that prevents our people from resisting. All I can suggest is that from this moment on, you make a conscious decision. No, I will not live in fear any longer. Not fear of the FBI, not fear of the police, not fear of losing my job, not fear of non-white violence, not fear of social ostracism from ignorant people who know no better. You need to say to yourself, no, life is not all about me. You have that strength within you. It's your inheritance from the 1,000 generations of our people who have gone before. The Jews have robbed you of much that is rightfully yours, but they haven't robbed you of that strength. It's there within you still, if you will finally make the decision to use it. Okay, third music break. I don't know how many of you ever saw a movie called Miller's Crossing from about 1990 or so, but in my humble opinion, it's one of the best gangster flicks ever made. It did for the Irish mob what The Godfather did for the Italians, and it's also one of the few movies ever to come out of Hollywood that I myself would consider to be anti-Semitic, and believe me, I have mighty high standards in such matters. I know it was made by the Coen brothers, maybe that's how they could get away with it. Anyway, there's one sequence in the movie which I personally consider to be one of the greatest gunfight scenes ever filmed. I won't go into the details, but basically the Cosa Nostra has sent some hitmen to whack out the Irish mob boss, played by Albert Finney. The Italian hoods break into his house, and they kill the bodyguard, and then they go creeping up the stairs to shoot him in his bedroom. But things don't go quite as planned. I'll just quote one of the characters later on after this scene. Say what you will, the old man is still an artist with a Thompson. Anyway, the point of all this is that during this big shootout scene, in the background is playing one of the best versions of the Irish classic Danny Boy I've ever heard. From the Miller's Crossing soundtrack, this is the renowned Irish tenor Frank Patterson.
Until you call.
At the beginning of my second Northwest novel, A Distant Thunder, I made reference to a man named Francis Fukuyama and a famous essay he wrote entitled The End of History. Francis Fukuyama is a Japanese college professor and pseudo-intellectual type who, in 1989, published a lengthy article in one of these turgid, left-liberal think tank journals that no one's ever heard of called The National Interest. According to Google, anyway, I had to look this up. The essence of what Fukuyama says in that article is that liberal democracy, i.e. Jewish-controlled plutocracy, is, quote-unquote, the final phase of man's ideological evolution, and has proven itself superior to such alternate systems as monarchy, theocracy, communism, military dictatorship, constitutional republicanism, etc., so as to become the final form of human government. Thus, according to Fuku-san, the history of the world from this point on will be nothing but a glittering blur, one endless vista of Dilbertson cubicles, Sunday morning talking heads on cable TV and Walmarts, each with its own McDonald's attached, of course. You know, as an example, I've always found it fascinating that the first thing the American invaders did after capturing Baghdad was to bring in and stock a Burger King at the airport. Or, as we in our silly little movement put it, Zog is forever, unbeatable and invincible and all-powerful, and any resistance is futile, so please stop pestering us with this Northwest thing, Harold. Now, this is one of those topics where I'm somewhat at a loss for words. What the hell am I supposed to say to such a pernicious idea other than that it's just plain wrong? And is there any point in my attempting to refute it? I will just find some other excuse to do nothing. This is the movement where we never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. The first thing that strikes me, just from glancing over the Google articles that came up in my search, is that apparently Fukuyama himself is now backtracking on this stupid idea that the future of the world is nothing more than eternal CNN and Ronald McDonald. He seems to have noticed the fact that liberal democracy is collapsing, and when a huge empire like this finally falls, all kinds of possibilities exist for peoples to seize back their destinies. I always said that the Japs were the smartest of all non-whites. I might add that the essential nature of liberal democracy is already mutating. The kikes in the Anglo-Zionist ruling elite, that is to say the soulless white men in business suits who are a worse enemy to our race than any rabbi, have learned that we now have been sufficiently dumbed down and sunk into apathy to the point where it's no longer necessary to maintain the level of appearances that used to be required. The showpiece of liberal democracy has always been the election of representatives. But the legislative branch of government is now, for all practical purposes, defunct. There is no institution in America which is less respected than Congress. Actual power no longer resides in the elected representatives of any parliamentary body anywhere in the world, much less in the United States Congress. Our last president, before this nigger, was appointed by the Supreme Court as opposed to the usual sham electoral process. Congress has repeatedly abdicated its constitutional authority to declare war, so that the American president is now more or less a Caesar who invades and conquers foreign countries at will. The judicial branch of government is in the process of being subsumed by the electronic communications media. Court TV is being slowly transmuted into a court, and instead of trial by jury, we now have trial by media and Nancy Grace. So far, this is only occurring in a few selected celebrity cases such as O.J., Michael Jackson, Scott Peterson, etc., but I've seen serious proposals that criminal prosecutions be turned into cable TV or internet shows, wherein guilt or innocence is decided by mass voting or polling of the viewers. The destruction of human life as a form of entertainment, bread and circuses, as they used to say in ancient Rome. Yes, there are those who claim seriously that this would be a true jury of one's peers. Considering the nature of our peers these days, God help us if that ever comes about. But the beginning of this trend is distinct. Some attorneys now retain media consultants on their staff as a matter of course, and they spend more time on talk shows than in the courtroom. In short, liberal democracy, far from being the end of history, is only the beginning of something else. Something which may admittedly turn out to be far worse, but still by no means the final phase of man's ideological evolution. Let's get something straight, people. We are Aryans. We are better than everyone else. We've just forgotten that fact, and we're bone idle with it. If we ever decide to exert the effort, we can wrench Fukuyama's history off its Jewish track and back onto the course of Western man and civilization, even at the 11th hour and the 59th minute. Nothing is inevitable, and nothing lasts forever, including the United States of America and the rule of Barack Obama. Period. End of story. That's just the way human nature is. All right, now, the Northwest Migration offers human history a way out of this swamp of collapsing liberal democracy. We can all come here and make our own country. It's simply a matter of our choosing to do so. And we damn well better make that choice soon. Because if we don't, we may all live to see the end of our history as a race and a civilization. Well, our time is up, and that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha Andaban. Freedom.
In their footsteps of the rising north.